the fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights.
Gardner through center. Dropped it back, but onto the stick of Brooks Light. Light cutting in off the wing. Scores!
Turnover City in the first period. It led to the goal that the only one Washington would need. It's Brady Lang in the morning. Brooks Like off a Jake Gardner blind turnover intended for Phil Kessel. Washington would add a Perreault goal in the third. 2-0. They win. Leafs 7 scored in 168 minutes. How you doing? It's Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590, the Fan, Sportsnet 1, and of course on Sportsnet590.ca. Get in touch with the show via Twitter. Jim Lang 590, Farwell 590. His tweets will come back somewhat croaky, and Brady Fan 590 as well. No excess talking. What can we do to really rile you up today and get you mad so you yell?
You want to talk about the shootout again?
Jim's too hyper. You're never hyper enough, and I just yell sometimes. So how do we pull this off? What can we do
to get me?
Yeah,
right.
Let's badmouth Hines Ward.
No, shut up.
Or the Kitchener Rangers. Why don't or Don
just,
Cameron.
Why don't you just, hey.
Exactly, yeah. The Godfather, look out.
Why don't
here
you go back
now.
Over those stats of the Leafs recently? They made me feel really good.
Now, it's been 6 straight games. James Reimer hasn't played. We don't know if he'll play Tuesday against Florida. Odds are slim, given Gustafson's given up 2 regulation goals in the last 125 minutes. And there's not really a goalie around that's going to make a great save on Claude Giroux. Giroux was, you know, Pavel Datsyuk-esque in scoring that goal to win it in the shootout on Saturday. Why do you guys, what's your theory for James Reimer not playing? Everybody's got one at this point. This is, say what you will, even if you like Gustafson a bit more, if that's what Randy Carlyle really thinks, having watched them in the last 12 months, that's fine. But 6 straight games, 2 back-to-backs, and Jim, as you noted, time change yesterday, travel. You turn Gustafson around. They couldn't have got to Washington probably before 2 a.m., which became 3 a.m., and 12 hours later, he's on the ice. 13 hours later, he's on the ice warming up.
My only theory to this, and my only answer, Greg, is Randy Carlyle has zero confidence in James Reimer as a goalie at the NHL level right now. He's seen tape. He's seen him in practice.
He's never coached him. If Reimer came in first game and lost 7-1 for Carlisle, he might be. It's like a bad first date. You're like, no, it's okay. You smoke. You like country music. You smell like bad
there's
flowers.
There's nothing wrong with
I'm
country
out of here.
Music.
There's right, a lot anyway. Wrong with
sure.
Country
there's a lot
music.
Wrong with it. Exactly.
But he's
watched Jersey Shore.
He's obviously seen Reimer in practice and is not liking what he's seeing. He's getting feedback from his coaching staff. It's like Gordon and Cronin, the holdovers and Allaire. He's seen video.
But it's practice.
Not
a game. Practice.
And why wouldn't Gordon and Cronin have that influence over Ron Wilson then?
Because maybe Ron Wilson had too much influence over them, and Carlisle is requesting their feedback. What do you think? Because obviously he's coming in there and trying to get some feedback from the holdover coaches, what they think about what happened and what's gone wrong. Reimer's last 4 games before he went into exile, he gave up 15 goals in those 4 losses. So he was not in a good place before he got nailed to the bench.
What's your theory, Mike?
Well, I'm not sure Gustafson was a lot better before Randy Carlyle got there, right? I mean, and I agree, and I mentioned the stats earlier, over 5 games, 11 goals in regulation, the shootout goal that Greg already documented. The only thing I can think of is that Randy Carlyle does not like James Reimer for whatever reason.
Yeah. I mean, personally?
Exactly. Is it personal? Is it the numbers? I don't know what it is, but how can you come in?
How do you not play him once?
Exactly. Not even once.
I'm as confused as everyone. I mean, especially yesterday with the 21-hour turnaround, I thought if there's any game they're going to give Reimer. I mean, Gustafson barely had a chance to wake up, and he's thrown in there facing Ovechkin and the likes. So my only thought is Carlisle has so little confidence in Reimer, he's only going to play him as a last resort.
Our number, 416-870-0590, *590. I haven't weighed in on my theory, but I'll just ask the question instead. Is it more disturbing that Jonas Gustafson has a sex tape of Randy Carlyle or that he's prepared to use it? Which is your, how is this possible? And look, this would make sense to me if Gustafson has 2 years tenure to come and Reimer's a free agent and Gustafson was the one that got super hot, played great, great in March of last season for a team that didn't play very well in front of anybody else before Reimer got there, not John Sebastian Jaguar, not Jonas Gustafsson. I would understand it. But what do you do? You're playing the guy who might leave, who you probably have no intention of offering a contract to, and God knows you can't. And unless you can trade James Reimer, all this big bald talk that Brian Burke had about, I got this offer and that offer and I got this, guys are willing to back up Brinks trucks for James Reimer, but he's our guy. Hasn't played in six games. Most meaningful time of the season. Hasn't seen the ice. That's your real deal. That's your I'm getting great offers and I won't trade him. That's what's happening with the Maple Leafs. 416-870-0590.
You got me. I mean, I'd love to hear Burke and Carlisle, well, especially Burke, give some sort of explanation to everyone what happened to the great James Reimer. He pronounced on trade deadline day that this is the guy, did he not? Because I'm not going to trade for the guy. I'm not going to allow anyone to take him off our hands. And now I don't know if we're going to see him for weeks on end.
Greg, I mean, he gives up that overtime howler against the Devils, and I heard people who I think I respect, sort of, kind of, say, when will we see him again? That might be the end of his Leaf career. They might waive him tomorrow. He started six straight games, and I concur. He's not been terrible in starting those particular games. But this is not what we expected. This is not what we thought when we were all surprised Randy Carlyle even started him in Montreal the first night. Well, he's started him every minute since then.
The Pittsburgh game, because he'd given up he gave up five goals in that loss to the Bruins on the Tuesday night, and he starts the next night in Pittsburgh. I thought maybe if there was a game that Reimer would have started, that was one as well. So I don't know when Reimer's going to start. I just think in my mind that Carlisle has no faith in him and no trust in him to be his guy to start him in net.
Any belief at all, since we're all talking amongst friends here, we'll get to the calls in a sec. Any belief at all, they put Gustafsson in thinking, well, he won't get results. Players don't have that switch they can turn off or on, and Gustafsson's playing for his NHL life here, his NHL career in these games, hoping if it's not the Leafs, somebody else will see him and say, oh, I'd have him as a backup. I'm okay playing him 20, 22 games a night behind a guy that I like a lot better. No one's going to look at Jonas Gustafsson and say, that's the answer to our goaltending issues. Only the Leafs would do something like that, which they did last summer when they let everybody else, all the Vokuns and the Theodores and the Emerys, sign somewhere else.
But if he keeps this up, Gustafsson's going to get $1.2 million, $1.5 million as a backup in the contract in the summer. So this is a dream scenario for Gustafsson and his agent.
I know. I'm glad I'm already sitting down, but I'm not sure you're wrong. Corey and Ancaster, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. What's your theory?
Hi, morning, gents. I think you're just touching on it a little bit there. Gustafsson's a free agent in the offseason, and the Leafs have already committed to Reimer, but not to Gustafsson. So I think a big part of this is they're going to ride him as if he's number one and seeing how he performs. And they haven't done this really with him since they've had him. And it could be a situation where he's got a new coach, he's got someone to impress who he maybe can have an impact and make an impression on, and they're just going to see what he's capable of. Whether anybody else in the league wants him is irrelevant, whether they want him or not. And the fact is, Reimer hasn't performed the way he had at the beginning of the season or the end of last season, and there could also be a situation there where maybe he's not fully recovered from what happened.
Oh, I don't think he is.
Before his confidence is completely shot.
I don't think he is, but then they shouldn't have him, but they should absolutely just shut him down, get him away from the rink. I mean, he's got to still sit at his stall, and time to time answer questions about why he's not playing. Get him out of this environment if he's not ready. Saying all that, there's no point in showcasing Gustafsson. He's not your property in 4 or 5 months. If you're looking to trade Reimer, let's say the whole plan is, and that's the Sammy writes in a tweet, Jonas will be re-signed and Reimer will be traded at the draft. What kind of value are you placing on Reimer? Hey, you still want James Reimer? Well, we did, and then you didn't play him the last 17 games or played him once or twice. So, and you're the 26th place team. You must think a lot of this guy to play him two times in the last 17 games after giving him a 3-year contract last summer and telling everybody he's your number one goalie.
You can't trade him if that scenario. If he only plays twice the last month of the season, no one would give you anything for him.
No, you can't base his tradability on the contract that you've given him because he hasn't played to even that contract at this point, right? He hasn't lived up to that expectation.
Who's going to pay him $1.8 million a year to play 20 games? I don't want to pay my backup that.
No,
sorry.
But see, here's the other thing I don't understand. The Leafs are playing this new, tighter, more responsible defensive system under Carlisle. Maybe Reimer could benefit from it if he gave him a couple starts.
Joseph in Brampton, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. What's your theory on Gustavsson Reimer, Joseph?
First of all, I can't believe we're having this conversation when the Leafs haven't scored a goal in 125 minutes of hockey. But regardless, look, Carlisle obviously sees something in Gustavsson that I've seen since the beginning. Gustavsson has better reflexes. He's a quicker goalie. He comes out, he challenges shooters a little bit better. And Reimer's just playing very slow, and he hasn't been the same since his injury. Maybe he's trying to showcase him to Burke and trying to convince Burke, listen, we got to sign this guy. He's the better goalie.
You think this is a Carlisle plan and not in part a Burke plan? Why wouldn't Burke say, look, I'm not keeping this guy, Randy. You're wasting your time. Isn't that the thing to say?
Well, didn't Burke shoot a bullet across the bow of Wilson when he said Gustavsson saved our hide twice this season?
Yeah, he did say that.
Yeah, he did do that. He did do that.
And Wilson was shoving Reimer down our throat for whatever reason, and he wasn't the same goalie from last year. So I don't get it.
Well, now, and you can look, we were talking earlier about the fact they've got a goal drought. What's more surprising to you, that Gustavsson played seven straight starts or that the Leafs can't score a goal in a weekend? It's the first part. Come on.
Look, the most surprising part is that the Leafs are closer to the bottom than they are to a playoff spot.
That's not surprising, actually, given that you've watched the last 16 games, I take it. Keith in Oakville, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Man, I'm laughing this morning because last caller has some great points to what I wanted to say. Look, I can't believe we're having this conversation. I know you guys wanted to rile us up this morning.
No, I don't know. What's the reason then? You tell me there. None of us know.
We're confused.
This is the radio show. What's the reason?
I'm going to tell you, man.
I want to hear it.
And the new coach comes in, man. If I was the new Leaf coach, I'd do exactly this. Gus, you have bailed us out twice, like the GM said this season. I've been following Leaf fan here. And look it, we can't score anything because the new Carlisle system is now coming into effect, right? Guys are holding their stick tighter, checking better. We've also not given up a whole bunch of goals, even though we're not scoring, right? So that's what's going on. And this back and forth with our goalies all season messed up the psyche of this team. And Gustavsson's the guy. Even though he's not signed long-term, I can't see how you're not.
But then you have Gustavsson. To then tell me that they're going to sign him long-term.
That's my point. They are going to sign him for a shorter-term deal. I expect that.
But then that means
so the same two goalies are back next year.
Absolutely,
and that's good.
New coach, everything.
Keith, that's
is that good?
I know. What do we got?
He's laughing.
All right, Keith.
He can't say.
Thanks for the
laughing.
Phone call. You actually did clarify it. Honestly, I would turn the keys of the show over to you if I could, Keith. Get your ass in here as soon as you can, because that actually made more sense than I tried to in the last 13 minutes. So Gustavsson and Reimer next year.
Yeah,
we're all
go.
Good with that.
It's perfect.
Doesn't your head throb in pain just thinking?
Thumbs
about
up. Let's go. Bang's table. You could win a VIP trip to Florida, catch the Jays in Grapefruit League action, listen to Brady and Lang in the morning, the Jeff Blair Show, Tim and Sid winning word is on the way. When you hear the cue to call, you gave me the winning word just now, didn't you? I can get it. Oh, it's Slugger. Don't call yet, but it's something to put in your little pocketbook there, Slugger. You can qualify for a trip for two to Florida, three nights at the Hilton Clearwater Beach Hotel, a VIP welcome reception with the Jays, game tickets, and more. Get all the details at sportsn590.ca. Greg Wyshynski from the Puck Daddy blog on Yahoo Sports joins us next. He's our Sportsnet 590 insider for Sicily Honda. Reimer Gustavsson, we ask him, is Ilya Kovalchuk going to get Hart Trophy consideration for the year he's had in New Jersey? All that and more. It's Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 1.
The Fan on demand. Brady and Lang.
You can be my wingman anytime. Bullshit. You can be mine.
On Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Dedletsky played across. Kovalchuk swoops and scores!
If at first you fail, never give up. That pass by Zedlitsky, he just threw it over in the area. You didn't have to get it on a stick. Ilya coming out, just kind of went on that one leg and circled around on his edge and then just let it fly.
5 goals, 11 points in March for Ilya Kovalchuk. He scored 5 and tossed up 4 3-point games or more in February. So he's red hot, same amount of points as Phil Kessel right now. And he hasn't yawned recently or told the camera to get lost. Yeah. Just lately, I'm just comparing the two.
30 points his last 20 games and counting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Good player. Good player.
No, elite player.
Very good player. He's okay. don't forget, by the way, I just finally saw the Gaborik overtime winner against the Islanders. Gaborik then stuck out his tongue like he was Gene Simmons. He might have the longest tongue in the NHL. I'm sure there's a lot of guys that would claim, and there might be some female listeners that can claim, no, I know a guy who, anyway, it's a really long, you don't want to see it again. I don't want to see that highlight at all again. There's something about a man's tongue, a man seeing another man's tongue.
I have no desire to see your tongue, I can tell you that.
Our next guest, by the way, Jeff Blair will join us from Dunedin at 7:40, is our Sportsnet 590 hockey insider for Sicily Honda. He was a huge part of our NHL trade deadline coverage, award-winning trade deadline coverage, awards to be announced later, from a couple weeks ago. He is Greg Wyshynski from the Puck Daddy blog, and of course from Merrick V. Wyshynski in the afternoons, or really any time that's podcastable, our Sportsnet 590 insider. Good morning, Greg.
So does Michael Jordan get a tongue exemption? Because that's, that was his thing.
But I know Jordan was kind of, his tongue would kind of just hang out of the side like a tired dog. Like, how do I put this? Gaborik's was quite erect. He was so excited that he scored on the Islanders.
So if your tongue is floppy like a St. Bernard, then that's okay in sports. But if it's turgid,
it should never be pointing up. There's gotcha. Michael Scott's ready to phone in whether that's what she said, but it shouldn't be pointing up after an overtime winner. In any market, I don't care if it's a big market or small market. It's not a market thing at this point.
Well, I mean, let's face it. I mean, given his history, given everything else, let's just be happy he didn't strain his tongue after scoring the game winner.
Yeah, they may be reexamining the tongue for that reason. What are your observations, not necessarily from afar, of Randy Carlyle coming in? We were just talking about it, and Jonas Gustafsson, who's out of term at the end of the year, playing 6 straight games, whereas the Golden Boy, the real deal according to his general manager, sits and watches in must-win hockey games. What's your observation of how Carlyle's handled the goalie here with just one goalie? It's not even goalies.
Well, my observation is he's trying to make the playoffs. It hasn't necessarily been working, but he's trying to make the playoffs, and I think that upon evaluation, maybe he thought that Gustafsson gave him the better chance. Look, I mean, look, they're playing better D, right? Can't put the puck in the net, but playing better D. And the whole thing is that when he was hired, it was a smart move because it gave him a chance to evaluate the roster. He wasn't going to come in cold in September and try to figure out this team. He'd be able to teach some systems. He'd be able to evaluate the talent. But they weren't going to make the playoffs. I mean, they were going to make the playoffs based on the percentages of them making the playoffs based on the deficit and on the fact that they had just a murderer's row of games in March. So Reimer, Gustafsson, it didn't matter. They weren't going to make the dance anyway.
The Penguins now have won 9 straight, Greg, without Sidney Crosby. When can we expect to see him when they finally clear him to join the lineup?
Well, it's smelling like Thursday, maybe, against the Rangers. I mean, he said that at a minimum, Sunday against Boston was going to be the first opportunity for him to come back. He never said it was going to be the target date, but he said that that was going to be the earliest he could come back. But, they've got a few days off now. He'll have the ability to get a bunch of other practices under his belt, maybe take a little bit more contact. You said he needs more contact. So maybe Thursday, maybe not. But like you said, it's not as if, A, they're not used to playing without him, and B, that they're not thriving without sitting in the lineup.
Greg Wyshynski, our guest from the Puck Daddy blog on Yahoo Sports. We played the Kovalchuk clip. He's playing great. He's getting players around him. Adam Henrique may very well win Rookie of the Year, and that's been a nice pairing. But the Devils have been a pretty easy out in the postseason in the last few years, and they didn't even make it at all last year. What do you see, especially if they sit in that sixth spot and end up playing the winner of the Southeast Division, probably by default at the end of the day? Do you see the Devils being able to make some noise this year for a change?
It's possible for one reason, and that's that beyond the Kovalchuk line, and he's been fantastic, by the way. I mean,
yeah.
I think he's getting a little bit more heart talk now than he was a week ago, and that's a good thing because he certainly deserves it. But they've got themselves another scoring line, and they've got themselves some scoring depth, and one of the guys that's really been a difference maker for them this year has been David Clarkson, who I think's kind of morphed into one of the best power forwards in the NHL. And you give full marks to Pete DeBoer for that. They have a relationship going back to junior. And Clarkson's just elevated his game something wicked this year. He's been a real force for them. And he, Patrick Eliash, they've got options other than Kovalchuk, Henrique, and Parise, which is impressive. And if Travis Zajac ever gets back before the playoffs, that's going to be another thing. But what gives me pause about them is that Marty Brodeur hasn't won a playoff round since, before the lockout.
Yeah.
Or so it would seem. And then the defense there, I mean, they're still trotting out Mark Fain and Andy Green as a shutdown pairing when the chips are down. And that gives you pause as well, because there ain't no Scott Stevens or Scott Niedermeyer patrolling the blue line for this team. So they still have sort of some question marks, I think, defensively. But up front, they've been very good. And like you said, it might come down to the matchup. If they wind up playing a Southeast team in the first round, then they may be able to make a bit of noise.
You watch the team so closely, and you're in the market. Do you look at Parise and say, I'm sure he's going to hit the market, or there's still a chance the Devils could re-sign him? We haven't had a guy hit, Kovalchuk included in my mind, Greg, a guy hit July 1 like Zach Parise in a long, 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 long time.
Oh, I've taken down all the photographs from inside my locker. I mean, all the posters off the back of the doors. I'm convinced that he's not going to come back. I wish he would. It'd be great, but I think all indications are that maybe the financial straits of the team, just his will to want to go and try to win someplace. So, I mean, there's all these signs pointing to him not coming back and this being the last hurrah. I think there's every possibility that he's going to hit the market. They don't hit the market, but most likely the Devils will trade his rights before that.
Greg, you wrote about the NHL GM meetings that are going to be taking place in Boca Raton and the concept of salary sharing to help alleviate GMs to make more trades. Is this something that has legs? Will we see something where teams can eat money to free up trading?
Well, it's going to be a thing that they'll talk about, but it's not going to have legs until we get to the CBA negotiation, and then it's just going to be a matter of whether or not the right teams can cull enough support to try to make this an issue for the CBA. You figured the PA would go for it because it's going to create an environment where guys aren't stashed down in the AHL or over in Europe, and that some of these toxic contracts can move, much like they did before the CBA banned the practice of sharing a salary between teams. I'm for it, but you've got to put controls in place. You give these guys an inch and they take 1,000 miles. As long as there's a thing in place where you're only allowed to pick up a certain amount of money each season or a certain amount of money on every trade, and it's not a case where every transaction is a shared salary situation between teams, then it might work. But otherwise, these guys are just going to find new and exciting loopholes around this thing.
I suggested on Twitter the other day that if Lou Lamoriello was the GM of the San Jose Sharks, he'd currently also be the coach of the San Jose Sharks, or he'd wait till about the 80th game. What do you see there in San Jose? I was saying Ottawa might be the most surprising playoff team post-lockout, given everything swirling around them 12 months ago. I'd argue the other way. The Sharks might, if it happens, be the most surprising non-playoff team that we've had since the lockout.
By far. Even you take a team like the Capitals and you're like, well, you know what, they've shown some deficiencies in the playoffs and maybe the window's closing. No one thought the Sharks are going to miss the playoffs. And it's a real stunner. I mean, still, if you look at the internals, I mean, they're plus 11 goal differential. There's a lot of reasons to believe they are a playoff team, that this isn't going to go down the drain. But, the Capitals are an interesting comparison in the sense that Doug Wilson went out and made a bunch of moves. The Brent Burns move, the Heatley for Havlat flip, Dominic Moore, Michael Hanzus. He's made a lot of these moves, and much like Joel Ward, Roman Hammerlick, Thomas Vokoum for the Capitals, they've not all worked, it seemed, the way that we thought they would to make this team a cup contender. And so there needs to be some scrutiny there. But I think at the end of the day, if they miss the playoffs, you worry about McClellan.
He can't survive it. I worried about him last year. Yeah. They crashed out so miserably against Vancouver last year.
But it was in the conference finals.
I know.
I think you worry about him because there have been so many rumblings about his fate this year. But more so than that, I mean, it's going to fall on Niemi. And you're going to see this team make a significant push for a top-level goaltender, I think, if they miss the playoffs.
Like Gustafson.
Of course.
Miami for Gustafson solves everybody's problems.
Reimer's more available, I think, now that he's the backup. But, yeah, I mean, that kind of thing, I think, is the direction.
Available. He's available for yard work. He's got enough free time on his hands.
Does it make it look worse than San Jose, Greg, because Dallas is on a five-game winning streak, and they were a bubble team not that long ago?
Right, and you know, I think the catalyst for that has been between the pipes, has been Carl Lettinen. So you're seeing the difference that makes right there. The real worry for the Sharks is that because of that Dallas winning streak and the fact that they're looking like a real solid playoff choice right now, especially getting Brendan Morrow back healthy, is that your options are now limited. You know, Phoenix keeps winning, Dallas keeps winning. You might be down to, what, like two spots in that Western Conference draw, and yeah, you still have, you know, a Colorado team and a Los Angeles team and Calgary with Kripisov that are going to be vying for those spots. So the options are dwindling right now insofar as the ways and means for the Sharks to make this cut.
It's Greg Wyshynski, the Merrick V. Wyshynski podcast later today. I'm hearing rumors of a Steve Ott appearance, just to class up the show a little bit, Maitre d' style, right? Is that true?
Yeah, we're having him off the top because if you watched HBO this year, you know he's quite the face-off man, as he's told us. He can spout chapter and verse where he ranks amongst the NHL's face-off leaders, so we much look forward to that.
We'll be listening and downloading accordingly. Thanks for this, Greg.
Thanks, boys.
There's Greg Wyshynski joining us. Sharks the last four seasons. One going backwards, 105, 113, 117, 108, 107 points. That was 5 years. They might end how many playoff round wins? Six playoff round wins, counting a couple that Ron Wilson won. They might finish with like 86 points.
I was just going to say 90. It'll be a stretch this year to hit 90 points.
And nobody's been injured. He's right. I mean, except for Havlat. Everybody, Thornton, Marlowe, Couture, Pavelski, Boyle, Klow, and Burns have all been healthy all season long. They haven't missed any games.
Yeah, Doug Wilson, you really never hear him about his job in danger. Like, he seems quite
so
safe.
Tight with ownership, like, yeah, remarkably, like Milbury, Charles Wong tight, just without the uncomfortable flirting. All right, 7:35, it's Brady and Lang. We'll do some comfortable flirting with Jeff Blair. He's down in Dunedin, Florida, with his show later on today. Tristan Thompson from the Cavs on that particular show. That's coming up. Jeff Blair, who'll do the show with Stephen Brunt today, we should mention. Tristan Thompson on the Jeff Blair show at 10:40. We'll get back to Leafs at 8 o'clock. And as well coming up, why the madness and the brackets not quite as meaningful as it was 10 years ago. We'll tell you why at 8:20. It's Brady and Lang, Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 1.
The Fan on demand. Now, more of Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Curveball lashed to right field deep. Backboard, Peraz turns, looks, it's over his head off the wall, base hit. Palisano scores, Lowry slides into second, beats the throw with an RBI double, his fifth two-base hit this year.
Brett Lowry crushing the ball down in spring training for the Toronto Blue Jays in Grapefruit League play. Jays will open up the home season 4 weeks from tonight. Feels like it should be closer than that, but it's a later start, given it's, April the 9th. They're here against the Boston Red Sox. They're in action today. It's a daytime match in Dunedin, Florida, Baltimore and Toronto. And just before that, the Jeff Blair Show, live from Dunedin, Florida, will indeed wrap up. Are you enjoying the... what I like about spring training is even when you see the footage of games that aren't on TV, it's better video than it used to be. In the 80s, it was like looking through the lens of the Zapruder film. It's like, is that Governor Connolly or is that Lloyd Mosby? What's happening here?
Again, yesterday with the sun, with the roof open in the car and listening to the Blue Jays broadcast.
The roof open?
I have a sunroof.
12 degrees.
So I'm Canadian. I put the sunroof open.
My God. So you would have a toque and a park on.
Listening to Jerry and Alan call the game, it just felt like this is it. It's baseball time.
I hope some of the neighbors complain. Let's head down south immediately. Jeff Blair from the aforementioned Jeff Blair Show. He'll be with his former Globe and Mail colleague, Stephen Brunt, today on the show. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. How come you get a convertible and I don't?
It's a sunroof.
Come on, Lang with a sunroof driving around in 12-degree weather in,
that's
like,
so
Newmarket? That should be illegal.
That's so Canadian.
He's wearing a short sleeve today. I'm lucky he's not got, like, shorts on today or something.
No, I have long pants. Come on.
He's going short sleeve. It's 12 degrees today. Seriously.
Amazing. It's going to be hot down here all week, too. It's going to be in the 80s, so it's actually pretty nice. I mean, normally when I go to Florida, it rains the first day I get in.
you know, me being a ray of sunshine, right?
That's the way it works.
I bring my little gray cloud with me.
Well, and a cancellation yesterday. Were they supposed to play split squad yesterday? I know half the team beat the Braves. Were they supposed to also play at Atlanta's complex and it got canceled?
Yeah, it was kind of interesting because it just poured. I mean, they had three rainouts in Orlando, and it just poured. And if you went literally five blocks away from the stadium yesterday, it was pouring. There wasn't a drop at the stadium until like the very end of the game. It was a vintage Florida weather. It really was.
You speak about the sunny disposition of people in Florida, Jeff. I can't imagine Dustin McGowan could be any happier than he is now. When you wrote about that, he's hitting 94 in the radar gun in Grapefruit League action.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, he looked really good. I mean, I've been watching Dustin throw in bullpen sessions, seeing him throw in games and whatever on and off, God, probably since 2000, 2001. And, you know, it's early. It's spring training. You know, the hitters aren't all zeroed in as well. But I got to tell you, that was, and I talked to Aaron Seabee about it, that might have been the best motion I've seen him have. I was telling someone the other day, if you watch him when he's on, he looks a little bit like Doc Gooden used to look. The ball just comes out so easy. And Aaron Seabee said the big thing is not just the velocity, but it's the way it exploded on him at the end. Like there was a real pop into the glove. And it was, I mean, Dustin's a guy that a lot of people, not only is the organization invested money in, but Dustin's the type of guy that a lot of people in the organization have invested a lot of emotional capital in. His teammates have invested emotional capital in, and quite frankly, the guys who covered the team as well, because we've known him for so long. So it was really, for everybody in that organization, you know, something that they really wanted to see. And there was kind of a cool moment at the end when he walked off the field. As he walked off the field after he completed his pitching, he was like joined by everybody else in the rotation, which was kind of a neat moment and I think kind of symbolic. A lot of guys in that organization, in that rotation, have also invested a lot of emotional capital in him. And I mean, I can tell you, if he, and you know, knock on wood, if he can at all stay healthy, now all of a sudden you're looking at Romero, Morrow, Henderson, Alvarez, maybe Dustin McGowan slotting in a fourth. If he's healthy, if he can give them six and two-thirds innings, 7 innings out of the gate, that's a real good rotation.
Jeff Blair, our guest, of course, the Jeff Blair Show, up at 9 with Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt today, live from Dunedin. Just to give you a sense, you know how long it's been, but I looked up his last win as a Blue Jay. B.J. Ryan closed it for him. So it's been some months gone by, and the obvious question is, He might say, well, no, at no point was I ever ready to give up, but there must have been moments when Alex Anthopoulos said, it's just not going to happen. This would be a great story, but it's an impossible story. Did the Jays ever get close to just saying enough, or did McGowan do enough on his own, getting things back to give himself this opportunity?
No, you know, it's funny, because I spoke to a couple of people on Saturday who've been with the organization since, you know, going back to when he was drafted. And they said the only time his name came up in any discussion in terms of what do we do about him was when he was healthy at one point, and J.P. Ricciardi and some of the people were thinking, look, if this guy's healthy, do we make him a closer? That was the only time there's been any discussion about him. A couple of things about Dustin McGowan. He's a smart guy. You know, he made a lot of money early. He was given a pretty good contract. He took care of his money. He put himself in a position where he could afford to be patient with the Blue Jays. And I think more than anything else, he knew that with his medical history, going to another organization where they would essentially have to relearn what he was about physically and medically probably wouldn't advance his career. You're better off staying with the people who know you best and trying to work with them.
Jeff, is John Farrell approaching spring training differently in year two as the skipper?
I mean, you'll hear people say that. I think the Blue Jays would like to have a good record this spring. I think they're trying to, you know, build a bit of a winning culture. But no, not really. The emphasis is still very much on pitching, and I think the fact that Dustin's next start is going to be in a minor league game as opposed to a major league game is probably, you know, reflective of the fact that John's still going to be pretty careful with these guys. The one thing I have noticed, and I don't know if this is John or just a product of the players they have, but I mean, I've seen more aggressive base running in two games that I've been here than I saw in like five preceding seasons. You know, Brett Laurie in particular. And again, I don't know if that's John's mindset But I think a lot of what you're seeing with this team, the aggressiveness of the team, just comes from the fact that a guy like Brett Laurie, he's been here for a year. You know, he was always a confident guy. His personality made it in the major leagues 5 years before he did, right? And he probably came out of the womb as a major league with a major league personality. But what you're seeing from him now is he knows he's an everyday player, so now he can work on stuff. Now he can. He doesn't have to worry about impressing the manager. Been there, done that. Now he can work and stuff. And it's really remarkable to watch him take batting practice. He took batting practice yesterday, and without a word of a lie, he put at least 15 balls over the bullpen. Like, that just does not happen that often.
Jeff Blair, our guest. John Morosi, our mutual colleague from Fox Sports, got a lot of people in a tizzy Saturday. Mentioned that Alex Anthopoulos was scouting the Phillies, left after Joe Blanton exited. I can't see this happening. Joe Blanton's got, you know, $8.5 million left this year, no control next year, and guy hasn't thrown 200 innings since 2007. I can't believe, and this is trading for an asset. I can't believe there's anything to this.
I'll tell you what happened. As somebody in the Blue Jays organization told me, if he was pitching in Tampa, we wouldn't have gone to watch him.
Yeah.
I mean, he was 15 minutes, 10 minutes away. You know, he's a guy that the Phillies have said they've got to make a decision on. They're willing to give in. They're willing to kick in maybe $2 to $2.5 million to move him. So, you know, I mean, they went down to watch him pitch. But, no, he doesn't fit into the long-range plan. He's not the type of guy they're looking for. I mean, he's a project, and they got enough projects. They don't need another guy who they're going to bring in and have to wonder whether or not the guy's capable of going five innings. So, as I said, it was a no-brainer to go do it. It's a short drive, and, yeah, there's nothing to it beyond that. I mean, if the Phillies were to call and say, hey, you know what, we'll pick up his entire contract and we don't need anything in return, well, then maybe you think about it. But, you know, two things. I think the Blue Jays like the pitching depth they have. And I also think that if you look around the major league rosters and if you look at some of the free agents that are available, there are going to be guys probably in another week to a week and a half who become available that if you needed in a pinch, you could bring in for a lot cheaper. And I think that's the approach the Blue Jays would take if they have to do it. But, you know, as I said, knock on wood, unless Brett Cecil totally falls apart, they may not have to approach that this year.
And that's just a byproduct, Jeff, because of Alvarez, McGowan, and Cecil looking so strong and healthy in spring training, that Anthopoulos' mindset about making a deal has changed a bit in the last 2 weeks?
No, I mean, Cecil, quite frankly, is still he's still a bit of a work in progress. I would still have, put it this way, if you said to me, if someone said to me that the number five starter may not be in camp yet, I wouldn't be totally surprised, because I think Cecil has a lot, he has a lot to do to regain the confidence of this staff. Kyle Drabik apparently only pitched one inning yesterday, got a couple of ground balls. I mean, the stuff they're doing with Kyle Drabik, with his mechanics, is such a complete overhaul. I mean, literally, they're working with how the guy lands when he throws a pitch and where he lands. I don't see him being a factor until midway through the season, if at all. So I'm not saying that they wouldn't have to add another guy, but I'm saying that they're more likely to just add a guy who would be a stopgap measure. And, I mean, you're not going to make a trade and then end up paying Joe Blanton $6 million. It's just not happening.
Jeff Blair, Stephen Brunn on the Jeff Blair Show at 9 o'clock. They'll talk to the Canadian, Tristan Thompson, who's improving week by week with the Cleveland Cavaliers at 10:40. Thanks for this, Jeff. We'll be listening.
All right, guys. Take care.
There's Jeff Blair joining us. Aerosmith was on 60 Minutes last night. They had CBS host Laura Logan, who sounds a bit like Leslie Stahl, but it was indeed Laura Logan. She's younger. Change of scenery. And she sat down with Aerosmith. And I want to play this clip where she asked them, do you think you're the greatest American rock and roll band of all time?
You've been described as the greatest American rock band. Is that how you feel?
We've been around long enough that we have seniority. I don't know if, I mean, there have been other bands that have been great, you know, and come and gone, but we're still here.
I can't really see that.
Over Bruce Springsteen?
No. You can't count the E Street Band. You can't count the Silver Bullet Band. You can't count the Heartbreakers. This is a band that doesn't have a guy out there on the front.
Okay. You know what? They had a great run in the mid-70s. Then they, cocaine and alcohol abuse just about killed them, literally.
Just disappeared for 10 years.
Exactly. Then they went to rehab multiple times, got sober, and then the late 80s had that comeback. But they did not have a continuous run at the top. I mean, I could say that the REM had a long run where they were really good.
See, that's where I'd go. I really would.
The Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Some people make a Red Hot Chili Peppers argument, a Metallica argument.
They never had a real like bottom out where you just they disappeared like Aerosmith.
And I find even Aerosmith's hardcore fans, they're going, they want to, they go to the shows, they want to hear Sweet Emotion and Dream On. They don't want to hear the song from Armageddon.
Oh,
they don't want to hear Crazy. Okay.
No,
they want to hear Love in an Elevator. They don't want to hear the new stuff that they've done recently. So
that's the problem with Aerosmith.
It's a tough question to answer.
They're like two different bands, 70s and 90s.
Look,
right?
We ask Farwell all the time, are you fantastic? And he just kind of nods. So it's a tough question to answer.
Well, we know he is.
He's
right?
Just, and he doesn't use, he's saving his voice today, so he nods. 7:54, Mike Farwell with a sports update next. The Leafs weekend, no goals all weekend, 2 wins in 16 games. Do you think this is a lack of effort from the team? How do you explain this disastrous run and your impressions of Randy Carlyle-style hockey over the weekend? If you could stay awake for it all. 416-870-0590-590. More into the Leafs on Brady and Lang next, and your chance to go to Dunedin next hour as well with the Jays. It's Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 1.